I'm excited to talk today.
Yeah. So today we decided that Jeremy is a brand strategist at Cuts. And a lot of the podcast episodes, we don't always want to have a guest. We think there's a lot of stories to be told within the Cuts story, as well as we can go into more value pieces that we're excited to share, as well as see a little bit more personality behind the brand. So I'm actually more excited for these type episodes than potentially guests. I like guests, but sometimes it can feel maybe two CEOs talking versus, you know, talking with our employees that share their stories, that is a little bit more relatable. So these, excited for today.
Yeah, no, I think you hit it on the T. I think like a lot of podcasts I see out there, there's not much substance to it. It's like you're listening and you hear the same things. It's like, there's no actual strategy, tangible element, to the podcast. So hopefully today we can go dive deep and give people actionable advice.
Yeah, definitely
to go about it. But I think there was a comment on YouTube that wanted to know your story, and sometimes that's forgotten even with podcasts. I find when they start is they're just looking for views. They get guests on with followers, and it's like, we don't want to do that. Like, yeah, we're trying to give value. So I think the first question would be is who's Stephen Borelli?
Yeah, my full name is Stephen David Borelli. I grew up in Wenatchee, Washington. I was born in Seattle. My mom and dad are both immigrants. My mom's family's from Cuba. My dad's is from Sicily. And yeah, I grew up in a small town, though. They moved from New York City right when I was born to kind of escape the crime-riddled city at the time. And my dad got a job selling produce, apples, in Wenatchee, Washington. And, yeah, absolutely loved living in Wenatchee, Washington. It's a small town, but I think as I got older, I've really become even more proud to be from Wenatchee. It's a lot of hardworking blue collar, people, good, Christian values just really a great place to kind of become something, because it's surrounded by, it's good family value, little town to live in. Plus the geographical area is amazing. You know, you got the Columbia River, you got Lake Chelan, not too far away. You got the Cascades, you got amazing hikes. I played like every sport under the sun, snowboarded. And I mean, I was really well-rounded as a kid, and, it was really like a world-class place to grow up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I grew up in a small town too. I think it like makes you appreciate the big cities.
Yeah.
But like, I really like a small town, but, and then once you move to a big city, you're like, maybe I liked a small town a little more.
Yeah. You appreciate having a big yard and, mm-hmm. Like not traffic to go to Trader Joe's. Mm-hmm.
So I guess like growing up for you, like what sports did you play growing up and how did that help you to where you are today? I know you played basketball, right?
Yeah.
Growing up.
I mean, I remember that when I was like 6 years old, I was like too young to start baseball. So my dad like got me in with the 7 year olds. And so I was like itching to play sports, like from the time I could play. I played, you know, baseball, basketball, football later as a senior in high school, but soccer, snowboarded. I loved just getting competitive and playing any sports. I had a twin sister. Or I have a twin sister. Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
Like, I think I found out like maybe 6 months into working here that you had a twin sister.
Yeah, and she was actually the better athlete growing up than me. And I think like I didn't realize it at the time, but as a kid, I was like always like in the best way, mm-hmm. just a little competitive with her. Whether it was in school with good grades, you know, playing sports, even like the little things, like having a good friend group. Mm-hmm. Like if she had a good friend group, I didn't want to hang out the D-gens, mm-hmm. you know, just because, you know, just little things you maybe didn't even realize at the time as a kid. But having a twin, especially when it's a boy-girl, when it's not like direct competition, I think a lot of my competitive nature was crafted and developed because of her at a very young age. And she was actually the better athlete. So like she played varsity high school before I did. And she was a phenomenal soccer player. She played in college. And I think just having to like compete against that and as in the household, it's like such a competitive advantage. My wife is a identical twin too, and she says the same thing.
No where, way.
Yeah, they her and her twin sister like would get better grades and like always try to like one up each other in a way. I think it's more competitive when it's the same gender, but yeah, twins is a huge competitive advantage, I think, in life. And as you get older, I think it's maybe less competitive and just really cool because you have, you know, you get married at the same time, you have kids, you can kind of do life together, which is really fun.
Yeah, no, twins, like, I think, like, competitive edge in high school, were you guys, like, in terms of, like, grades, were you in high school, were you thinking, like, did you want to become an athlete, or were you more, like, thinking, like, I want to do something big, or did that only come when you went to San Diego State?
You know, I always, well, one, my two heroes were probably Michael Jordan and Kobe mm-hmm. Bryant. I remember watching at the Wenatchee, we have this like athletic facility that I just lived at. My dad would drop me off there and I would play basketball for like 10 hours. And I remember watching when Michael hit that shot over in against the Jazz. And we were watching it together at this like athletic facility. And so Michael Jordan was like my first like muse of just like, man, this guy's like dominant. And then that kind of went right into Kobe Bryant. And I just love Kobe for, you know, all through, even to this day, he's like a big inspiration. So, yeah, I think my mom would always drop me off from school mm-hmm. and like, it's the little things that I think really make a big difference. She would always say like, you know, God told me you're destined to do great things in life. Mm-hmm. And you're special. So she would always say like, you're special. And as a kid, you know, you look up to your mom and she's like yeah. your whole world. And I think she would say this when I was like 5 years old. And like, I really believed her that like I was destined to do great and big things. And it was never a doubt in my mind that I would do great and big things. I would even tell people that like, oh, I'm going to be like Michael Jordan or like yeah. Kobe Bryant. So I always had like a big vision. You know, I think like maybe like eighth grade, maybe I was like, all right, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be a professional basketball player. Mm-hmm. I think I was like 5'2" going into high school. But I knew, like, I think having that big vision as a little kid really did help me, because I think where a lot of people are maybe in their mid-20s, I was maybe more like 15, 16, where my wheels were already spinning of, like, what I wanted to do with my life because of the big vision. And so, like, I think I always, like, thought things through. Like, okay, how does this get me to, like, something big? Because, mm-hmm. like, you know, I want to do something really special. Mm-hmm. And I didn't always know what it was, but I was always curious enough to try to kind of think. My dad was an entrepreneur. He started working for this gentleman with small business selling produce. And then he, the guy left the company and he kind of took over the business, a small one-man shop. And I just saw the way he lived of like, you know, he was my coach. He, you know, he had his own time. He didn't necessarily have a boss. He worked a lot. Didn't mean he didn't work a lot, but he could pick and choose when he wanted to work. And that was always something that I wanted to develop for myself. And, you know, I didn't get along with a lot of teachers growing up. I knew like I had a little, angst with authority at times, especially when they said, hey, do this and that. I hated it. So I think like that kind of helps entrepreneurship a little bit, because you're okay kind of trying to figure out things on your own. Mm-hmm. And so I think like between, you know, having a big vision as a kid, as well as wanting to do something special, I think it kind of led me to entrepreneurship, you know, after high school.
Yeah, I think parents, they have such a massive influence that sometimes you don't even realize. Like, I remember growing up, my dad was successful in business, and it was just in my head I was going into business. Like, I didn't even think twice. Mm-hmm. And I tell them this date, I was like, you guys hindered my ability to go pro in sports. Because they always told me that, like, it's not really possible, but, like, you know, like, you should have worked me harder. I tell them that every day. But talking about your dad and the Apple business, even just seeing that, like, him being an entrepreneur, him taking it over, I guess it would be two questions, but how did that help you? And two, like, what skills did you learn? Because, like, I know you were involved in some aspects of the business early on, which you got the experience that not a lot of people get as a young, you know, high school student.
Yeah, I think it was always, like, kind of learning from afar in high school. But my dad was really good on the phone. You know, a New Yorker, he could talk on the phone. And he didn't put up with people's shit, which I really liked. You know, in the Apple business, you talk to like truck drivers a lot of like getting your fruit from point A to point B. And I just remember some of like the absolute beatings on the phone. He would yell at these guys. And I never took it like as a way of him wanting to be an asshole, because that wasn't the intent. But like in business, it's not always pretty. And sometimes like people need to hear it, like, hey, we got a job to do, let's go. And so my dad's like the least egotistical guy in the world, but he had a like, hey, we got a job to do. And if you're not going to do the job, you're going to hear from me about it. Mm-hmm. And that I think has been one, it showed me, okay, like if I don't want to be that guy on the other end of it. So if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it good. As well as like, you know, like I think in entrepreneurs specifically, you just can't put up with people's shit. Like all the time it's a fight. Like you're either getting fought or you're fighting. There's no like middle ground. There's no like saying dormant. It's one or the other. So like you got to take the fight to everyone you work with. And I think, you know, early on in Cuts, I think that really helped me, because I think like that, like staying dormant is like the death of a lot of just startups in general, where you're maybe not doing anything wrong, but you're not pressing.
Yeah.
And it's always about the press. You always got to press. And it doesn't need to be forceful necessarily, but you always got to press, whether it is getting objectives done or pushing on people that are partnering with you to help you get things done, or just, you know, having a sense of urgency, I think is something that, you know, I could see in those moments with my dad. He always had a sense of urgency to get things done. I mean, my mom didn't work, so everything that that we made as a family was on his shoulders, and he had four kids. So that, you know, there was no one to look left or right with him, which was another thing, like he bared the burden. So I think like, those are all things like maybe it wasn't necessarily like him speaking. I could just witness as a kid.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. I think there's like that element too. Like, I bet you feel like you want to make him proud.
Yeah.
And that motivated you.
I think on that, like parents with high expectations for their kids is such a good thing too, because it does keep you out of trouble at times. Not that I stayed out of trouble completely, but I think it's good when kids feel that they don't want to disappoint their parents.
Yeah, I agree.
I grew up with friends that their parents kind of were like the cool parents. Not saying my parents weren't cool, but there was definitely expectations that they would set on us and my friends. And if we, you know, didn't fulfill those expectations, they would say something about it. And versus the kids that maybe their parents were cool, it was just this the shadow of, you know, it's not a big deal. My parents won't really care, when maybe you shouldn't have been doing that, and it can kind of lead down a slippery slope. So I think having those high expectations, my parents also had for all of our kids and or all of my siblings, and that I'm super grateful now. Maybe at the time it wasn't as fun, but it was really healthy.
You see it a lot. I mean, I find like the one scenario, and I would love to get your take on like what is the worst type of like parent on their kid. Like, I think we've seen it was the people who get like extremely like in this cage of like, you can't do anything. And then they go to school and they become like, they just get off the rails. They've been babied their entire lives. Yeah. And I think like my question would be to you would be like, what would be the worst type of parent?
I think there's like, one, that they need to have a good like compass, and they themselves need to be a good example more than anything to the kids. So my parents, you know, we went to church every Sunday. They had a good relationship themselves, which is really important. And, you know, they were really good examples of just how to live a good life. And my dad really respected my mom. So I think it really starts there first. And then, you know, setting expectations. I think too many parents now like say things like follow your feelings, or it's like such bullshit. There is parents are look over, have a responsibility to guide their children, mm-hmm. And put guardrails for their safety. Mm-hmm. You know, I think nowadays, if, like, for example, I used to love cookies. Mm-hmm. I would always steal. I would go in our neighbor's house and steal cookies. I love cookies to this day. There would be a rule, no cookies until after dinner, which mm-hmm. you've heard a million times. If my parents let me add cookies, mm-hmm. I would be a fat ass. And so they put the guardrails on of not enough cookies. Nowadays, you're just hearing so many weird things about parents of, like, you know, and I was a wooden spoon kid, mm-hmm. and my kids will be wooden spooners, where mm-hmm. if you do something, we're gonna clap some cheeks. Or maybe that's a bad analogy, but, like, you know, snap the booty, with them. 'Cause, you know, no means no. And, mm-hmm. and you need to tell them what no is. Mm-hmm. They're not going to figure it out on their own. But on the flip side too, you gotta let your kids fail too. Like, you know, I got caught drinking as a kid, and, little things like that. Like, mm-hmm. you gotta let them, they kind of, at the right time, mm-hmm. you know, kind of grow into, you know, who they're going to be. So I think it's really just like setting those, being a good example for yourself. 'Cause, you know, you definitely, mm-hmm. I definitely grew up with those, parents, not my parents, that would be like, that wouldn't drink in front of us,
yeah.
but then they would get, you know, with my dad, yeah. they would get blacked out.
Yeah.
And my mm-hmm. dad would, if he wanted to drink a beer, he would drink a beer in front of me. It wouldn't be this thing that he would hide. Mm-hmm. Because then, you know, on the flip side, what you just mentioned is the kid whose dad kind of hides it then goes crazy because he doesn't want to share his dad, which I think is so silly. Like, I would have wine at 16 on Thanksgiving, and it was just no big deal, mm-hmm. you know? So I think it's just like, you know, setting those expectations and then letting your kids kind of grow into them with guidance, and you're kind of putting your hands out from and say no, and just kind of keeping them on that straight path.
Yeah. I think one thing too, it's like, you know, some people aren't fortunate enough to have, you know, situations like, you know, you and I have been in, mm-hmm. where, you know, we've had mom and dad looking up, and things happen, and, you know, people grow up without a mom or a dad, or mm-hmm. maybe they don't like their parents and they're ready to move out. What would you recommend to them to, like, because I think one thing I find with you is you're phenomenal when it comes to finding mentor, mm-hmm. and finding someone to talk to when you need an answer or you're looking for an answer. Mm-hmm. I think for someone in that space, and there could be a bunch of people listening who are, you know, they're looking for a father figure to look up to. What would you recommend for them?
I think you got to be able to figure out who your heroes are, I think is really important. So like, you know, going back like to Kobe Bryant and Michael mm-hmm. Jordan, like maybe they weren't like people that I was necessarily talking with, but Kobe had a big work ethic that, like, I was like, oh wow, he's the best basketball player. So mm-hmm. I better, you know, go to the gym before school and get some shots up, you know, on a really basic level. But you know, I think you have to want to, you know, better your life in the sense of having parents or whatever you're trying to apply it to. You need to find, you have to have that want in you to even look for someone. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know where that, I think eventually you just got to get, if you don't have it, the best thing for you is to like get fired from a job or like get down, like fail in a way where you like have no choice but to look for somebody. Because I think like the enemy of progress the enemy of progress is like, we're just standing still, mm-hmm. because sometimes you like the best thing that can happen is when you drastically fail, and then you'll figure out, okay, I can't do it on my own anymore. Who's someone I can look up to or that I can call mm-hmm. to help me get through this, that is living the way I want to live. So I think being able to figure out who your mentors are is important. And it doesn't need to be super scary. It could be someone at your local church. It could be another friend that's your age that seems like he's got his stuff together. And people, like, when you're honest and wanting to just reach out to somebody, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier than you would think to connect with somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, I love doing that as a founder. I feel like that's one of my biggest jobs. Like, we were struggling with this Facebook ads thing. So I reached out to my buddy over at Roback and connected him with our Facebook buyer. And he gave us a great a little hack for Google Ads, for these catalog ads stuff. And I was like, oh wow, like that really helped us. Mm-hmm. So like that character trait of like not trying to do it on your own and looking and being curious to look for answers is a huge skill set. Like as a founder, I feel like that's maybe one of the most important things you can do is not try to figure it out on your own actually, and try to, you know, look around and see who's been there and point either yourself or your team in the right direction.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think a lot of people are timid or scared to like take that leap. It's funny because I know people who are like looking for a job, and it's like they're looking at job boards and looking there for a position somewhere. And it's like, well, you're competing against 150 other people.
Yeah, that's hard.
First, like find your dream 10 and try and get a job there. Mm-hmm. Like, and like you said, I mean, pressing like is one of those things. I think it's a really valuable skill to have, like almost like this resilience to like go after it and not like not take a no.
And I think to be able to press, you need to know what progress actually is. Cause like the worst thing you can do is lie to yourself, mm-hmm. which I would say coming out of college, I was sort of that way where like, I would like go to the coffee shop all day Saturday and end up like looking through SoundCloud, and I would be like, oh, I made progress that day. In reality, I was just like looking at for cool songs on SoundCloud or something. That wasn't progress. And then I think one of the best things that happened was I got laid off from one of my jobs. And so I was like, shit, I need to figure this out. And so like, it wasn't good enough just to go there. Like whatever I was doing that day, I needed to like take a step forward, yeah. have a good conversation, like find some type of real metric that was actually moving forward rather than just spending time doing something. So I think like understanding if you're pressing, what is like the metric that you need to accomplish to press to actually see progress. And through that, like desperation can cause some really good outcomes.
Yeah, no, I love that. I guess transitioning to like, so you went to San Diego State. I'm sure, I mean, you talked about it a lot on podcasts about, you know, you going to San Diego State. What was it like moving from, like you said, you were used to a small town, completely different, and you go to San Diego State, which is known as one of the bigger schools. But what was that like, and were you scared to take that leap?
I remember, so I was originally wanting to go to UW, mm-hmm. didn't get into UW, and then I accepted to go to Wazoo, and I went to orientation, and I remember coming home and calling my dad in the parking lot at school being like, man, I just don't think that's it. And I randomly applied to San Diego State because my sister had a basketball tournament at San Diego State in high school. And I was like, wow, San Diego State's like epic. The campus is like, felt like Disneyland, it was insane. And my dad was like, all right, we'll accept both Wazoo and San Diego State. And so I still didn't know where I was going to school after I graduated high school because I accepted both. Went to the orientation. It was like $500 to accept both. And then the first payment for the tuition was like in July. So we go out there and they're like, all right, out-of-state tuition's like $35,000 a year. And my dad's like, that's pretty much, I've saved 40 grand for you for mm-hmm. 4 years, which is like, it's 10K a year, call it, for a state school. He's like, we can go, but I'm going to use all your money on this and then it's on you if you want to go. So he was like, all right, let's do this. Let's get down to LA or San Diego like a month before school. You got to get a job and you got to try to get in-state residency, whether, you know, this yeah. next year or the year after. And I ended up moving down a month early, got a job. And I remember when I said goodbye to my mom and dad, I kind of started crying and I'm like, yeah, wow, I legit don't know a single person. I remember walking by and I remember like giving myself a pep talk. Oh, like I vividly, vividly, vividly remember it. Like said bye in the garage. Mm-hmm. And then I'm walking back to my dorm room and I'm like, okay, here we go. Like I gotta meet some people.
Yeah.
And then like shortly after I had to go take like an entrance exam because the out-of-state kids had to go take a test and then, you know, got in this little auditorium and then boom, I was like ready to go. It was so fun. Like even to this day, that a couple people I met that first like interaction at San Diego State, I'm still friends with today. My buddy actually married this gal that I was with. And I was just always good with like, I think getting a job on campus was really good. Cause I actually, there was no jobs available because they had already placed all the kids. But the only shift that was available was the 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. shift, letting kids in the dorm room that I lived at. And so I worked the 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. shift like three times a week. Like barely slept because I, you know, I had fun. I would join a frat. I did it. And then I would like go party and then go work at four. Mm-hmm. But the cool part about that job was I met everyone when they were coming home late at night or going to class. And it was when the T-Pain app was like big on iPhones. And I used to connect it to the speaker. And when people would walk in, kind of like either make fun of them in a lighthearted way, mm-hmm. or kind of like say hi and just kind of like, cause you also played DJ for like the music when people walked in.
Yeah.
And I like by the end of freshman year, I knew more people on campus than anyone. And San Diego State was like literally like the freshman year was like one of the funnest years of life. Cause everything was so new. Like being on my own was new. Living in California was new. The sunshine, the beaches, just like, you know, the meeting so many new people. I absolutely loved every second of it. Even just like going on a bus downtown San Diego for a small town kid, I was like, this is unreal. And I just love meeting new people. I think freshman year was sort of like a culture shock for me because I grew up in Wenatchee. And then like, this may sound weird, but getting to know kids that like were emo, you know, like I didn't know any kids who were emo before, you know, like I was kind of like an athlete, hung out with only athletes. So, and then, you know, having friends that were like emo, then I think it was good for me to realize not everyone's going to be like me, but there can be some cool people that I like, cause you know, you're in the mix with so many different types of people. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing about San Diego State that I think was really special. Public school or state school, a lot of out-of-state kids, mm-hmm. Some San Diego State kids, but most of the people I knew were like from St. Louis, New York, Boston, you know, Washington, you know, Northern California. So it was a really like a melting pot of like, you know, kids that wanted to live in Southern California and have a fun time, which I think San Diego State was known for. I think it's much better school now than when I went, but it was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think a lot of people are like sheltered. And they go to school. I was the same way. I was like a home buddy. Go to school and you're like, shit, like everything for the last decade was just like kind of like out the drain. Welcome to the real world. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing about, you know, your time at San Diego State was people still talk about this like almost like dream entrepreneurship class with all these founders. Like, What's the story behind, because I know there's
like a ton of,
like why San Diego State? Why are these founders, why were they coming out of San Diego State? Because I mean, you look at it and like some of the names that you're about to mention, are kind of like the leaders in D2C.
Yeah.
But it's crazy when I found out that story. I mean, I kept one after the other, they were coming out of San Diego State. Why do you think San Diego State is a good breed for entrepreneurs?
Well, I think it starts with just like classes were hard to get at San Diego State. They were overcrowded. Like there was good and bad teachers. You would either like could get an A because the teacher didn't give a crap and it was super easy, or like the hard teacher that just wanted to screw over these kids that liked to party. So just like that dynamic, it taught you kind of how to hustle. But then I think the lack of entitlement helped like kind of motivated kids to like maybe start entrepreneurship sooner than later. You know, there's not like a crazy alumni at San Diego State like there is USC where like, hey, I go to USC, I got a good shot just because I went there, I can get a job somewhere else. That didn't exist. So it was like, hey, we got to actually like start, you know, a company on our own. But it really was in Professor Ozinski's class, which like spawned a bunch of e-commerce companies specifically. I think the first one was Blenders, which, you know, the whole Dion thing last year, Chase Fisher, Pura Vida with Griffin Paul. There's Movement Watches. There's Cuts.
Did Liquid IV come out of there or no?
No, Liquid IV kind of ran in that circle, but not from there. There's a few more too. Cody Barbo, he recently started a life insurance company that's crazy big now too. So there's a bunch of companies that came out of there, but my story was I was in class my senior year, and I had a really good, there was a lot of classes I just didn't go to, but there was ones that I would go because the teachers were a joke. And I was like, this guy, he's fat and over shape, and he's a professor that drinks Coca-Cola all day. I'm out, you know? But then there were some professors that made money in their lives, and they wanted to do it as a give back. And those are the ones I was like in office hours there every day. And Professor Ozinski, he taught this entrepreneurship class and marketing classes, and he had Pure Vito, which Griff and Paul were like 5 years older than us, and they were presenting their like bracelet idea to class. And I remember being like, this is a joke in class. Like, this is a joke. Mm-hmm. And so then didn't think much of it. I got Griff's phone number. And then like 3 years later, I was at a party in Pacific Beach, and Griff, like, you know, people are like, oh, this Pure Vita thing's really taken off. And he shows me his Shopify account. And it's like 20K that day in sales. It was like, I remember it was like 22K. It was something, you know? And I'm like, damn, selling bracelets? That's a lot of bracelets going out just for 22K. And they got much bigger than that on a daily basis in their heyday. And I think like that really was like, okay, that was a good reference point to, okay, I think that's something I could do. And during that time, I had recently got laid off from a job, and I'm like trying to figure it out. And so me being curious in that time really benefited me to be able to, you know, that was something that I thought I could do. Mm-hmm. So then like I thought about it for a few more years. I'm like, all right, let me start thinking of something in e-commerce.
Yeah, no. Tell me about like, so you got laid off. I'm sure, you know, people have heard that story of the Lulu and the meeting, and
yeah,
Steven got laid off. But like, I think one thing I want to dive into is like, how rattled were you? Like, were you pissed off, or was it kind of like something you needed to be like, well, fuck you, I'm gonna build something? Or was it kind of just like, were you expecting it?
Well, I think now in hindsight, I'm like, they for sure we're gonna fire me after because they stopped giving me stuff to do for like 2 months. But I had like this vacation, which was Coachella, I was going to. And then like the week I get back, they just said, you're out. But I was an intern there, and I really hustled for him. Mm-hmm. So they're like, we got to give this kid a job. But then when I was there, I think they liked me more than I was needed. Mm-hmm. So like they wanted to give me a shot, but like there wasn't really much for me to do. I remember like I was doing like Facebook ads and branding for like the Dasani companies that were, I think it was like an Honest company, or it's one of the Dasani brands I would run Facebook ads for, as well as do business development to sign like one of the clients I worked on that we didn't get was Thermador. But through that process, I learned branding, and I learned a little bit about social. And then when they let me go, I was like, this is not that hard. I think I can do this.
Nice.
And I think I learned at that company much more than even they thought I learned, because I was just kind of some random guy. But Chad Farmer was actually in the book, The Tipping Point. So he was like a world-renowned creative during like the 1980s for Airwalk that I got to learn from. And then Brian Muntz was also a big like Ad Age type guy. He really, I mean, he was incredible with like attention to detail. Like if I missed one T or my sentence structure wasn't good, I remember one email, he just like sat me down and he like rewrote this email. And I'm like, man, I suck at writing emails. And after that, I was all super nervous to write emails to him. But you know, the attention to detail those guys had was incredible. And they really thought through branding spaces on paper. And it was just incredible, which has really helped me for cuts. But when they let me go, I was like, I just never want to be in this position again. Like, I'd rather my idea fail, and then it's the customers that maybe fell off. But it was sort of in my own hands. I just never wanted someone to say, nope, you're not needed anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's what rattled me the most.
Yeah. And no, I think, that, like we were talking about, like that little step of like, okay, like I'm going to do this.
Yeah. I think those moments in life are like super important. I mean, we have them even now if an employee leaves or, you know, a competition does the similar product. We're like, you know, we'll MF them, you know, like we want to like destroy them in every sense of the word. And I think competition's like so, so good. Yeah. Like having that fire of like everything's war. I know there's been a couple Twitter people that were like, never relate business to war. But I think that's like so stupid and so childish. Like if two brands offering the same product, it is war for the customer. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we've been beaten out sometimes. We've earned it some others. And it's like, you know, who's gonna win that dollar? And so I think that attitude of like getting knocked down and then like that fire of like, man, I want to destroy this person. I still feel it every day. And, but I love that feeling. Mm-hmm. So it's a positive.
Yeah. Justin Thomas, Full Swing too. He was talking about how, like, don't tell me, like, don't come up to me during the round when they're in their group. And he was like, I don't want to hear about you missing your shot or don't talk to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think like in sports, it's like such a good example. Like you go one-on-one against someone and like, you're going to kill them. Even UFC fighting, like they're literally trying to kill each other. And then they would go get a beer after. Like that's like kind of what I see business. It's like you have to kind of like hate your competition because you know it's going to drive you. Because like at the end of the day, you're competing for market share.
Yeah, like I'll be buddies with some founders, but internally I'm like, fuck them, you know?
And you have to give that to the employees. Like, hey, they're not us, you know? Like,
and I wouldn't, and it's not like a personal thing, like screw this person, like personally, but it's like their business versus mine, I'm going to absolutely destroy them. And that's it.
Yeah. I think like going back to like school and things like that, I think a topic that's talked about a lot, and I forget what side Mark Cuban's on. I think he's on the side of going to school. And then Gary Vee, on the other hand, is on the side of like, kind of like don't go to school. Now that you went to school, you went to San Diego State, you've created Cuts, which is this, you know, this successful company that hopefully goes on for years to come. What's your take on that?
I think it's just case by case. Like you shouldn't go into massive debt to go to get an undergrad because it's just not worth it at that point. So if you can do school where you can have like maybe like under 20,000 of debt, I would say even that's kind of a lot through 4 years. Then I think it can be a good thing if you don't know what you want to do. But then if you go to school and you don't meet anyone, it's a complete waste of time. The number one thing school is good for is to put you amongst your peers so that when you guys all get older, you'll have good people to call and good networks to build. And you should try to be in as many things as possible. You should do as many clubs, should go to as many parties, should go travel, should get your palate really developed for doing everything under the sun. Then it's a good thing. I mean, that's how I was. I was in AS, which is like student leadership. I studied abroad. You know, played on every intramural sports team. I was in a frat. I tried to do as much as I could. And then through that, I met so many people. And like, I don't know if I wouldn't have went to San Diego State, I don't know if I would have thought to do Cuts because it put me in that classroom with those kids that were up to something special. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't have that opportunity, I think like, it is a little bit harder because if you were 18 and you went straight into a job, you'd have that, I guess if you knew exactly what you wanted to do at 18, you should go do it. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't waste your time. Mm-hmm. But if you're still trying to figure it out, I think school is a good place to figure it out. But definitely, like, don't get into serious trouble. Don't make any boneheaded mistakes. Don't get into debt to go to school. But honestly, 18 to 22 is so fun. Like there's time to make money and that's not necessarily the time. Like go have fun and enjoy being young. Enjoy like going to Europe on like a, you know, $1,000 budget for like a 10-day period, like six people in a shared room. Cause you'll never want to do that as you get older.
Yeah.
But when you're younger, that's like acceptable. And like those, when I look back, were like the most fun times. And like, that's when you really bond with people. So like, I would say like 18 to 22, like do as much as you humanly possibly can and get as much experience as you can. So by when you're 22, you'll have, you know, you don't want to do that for too long, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's important for a short period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I think sometimes the internet, and I think that's just the thing with social, is like things get overblown. Like mm-hmm. they'll just like Gary's messaging probably isn't like that stern about that. Like it is case by case. I think he would be the one who would tell you that too. Like if you're looking for a reset you're looking up your, you know, communication skills to meet more people. I mean, school's a great place.
Yeah.
The substance in the material is probably dated, but so is a lot of things. But moving into like, I think like people on the internet, I think one thing, this goes back to, I went to this conference, or it wasn't a conference, someone was speaking, and the question always comes up, are entrepreneurs born or made? And a lot of entrepreneurs will tell you they were born. And it's like, almost feels like they're a little bit like, you can't do this. Like, I was born with being an entrepreneur. What do you think of that statement? Because I always think it like almost drives people away from trying to start a business, because it's like, I don't know if I was born to do this. Or do you think it was more entrepreneurs more made? Like, if you want to do it, you can get it done.
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. So I do think people are born to do certain things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there are certain people that have a really good voice, and they've had a good voice since they were a kid. And they're like born to sing, you know? And I think like, fulfilling your, like what has been placed on your heart by God, I think is super important for you to find fulfillment in what you're doing. So in that respect, I think you are born with what you're supposed to do, but it doesn't mean you can't learn how to be a great entrepreneur and end up loving it. So I recognize I'm contradicting myself, but I think entrepreneurship can be for everyone, but you got to understand who you are, because you might not be the guy that starts it, but you might be the second guy that comes in.
Yeah.
And so like some people, like if you look back to my life, I was groomed to be a good entrepreneur from, you know, having dyslexia. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had to do things differently. Like in school, I always tell this story, but college classes were really hard because I wasn't the type of kid that could sit down in a room for 2 hours and like do well on multiple choice tests. So I was telling this story the other day. There's a class I knew I was going to fail. I had a C minus going in, but to get into the big business program, I needed to get a B. So I needed to get like a B on this final. And me and the professor were homies because I didn't miss class, and he was a cool guy, but I knew there was no chance of me passing this test. So I was like, you know what? I had the test in my hand. I just put it in my backpack and then shook his hand. And I'm maybe not the most proud of this story, but then when the test came, I was like, hey, I don't know what happened to the test. And he was like, oh, I remember you were there. And I was like, hey, you know, I've been in class. Like, I got a C minus. I don't know how good I was going to do on that test anyways. Like, do I need to retake it, or can I just get, like, can I get a B? And I kind of talked my way into getting a B in the class. Maybe not through the most ethical ways, but like, you know, sometimes like that's kind of like entrepreneurship. Like there's gray lines, there's things you got to talk your way through. And you just got to figure out a way to get it done.
Yeah.
I'm not a proponent of cheating necessarily or manipulating teachers. I'm not trying to say that, but at that period in time, I need to get into the business school. I did what I had to do to get it done. Mm-hmm. So I think like, and, you know, that was good training for entrepreneurship. So like, it's easy to look back and say, I had a lot of that. So I think deconstructing like your likes and things you like to do is really important. And knowing yourself is going to ultimately help you decide of maybe I like being a startup because I like the energy of, you know, creating something, but like, I don't know what I want to do. So maybe you go find that guy starting something and team up with him.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good answer. I think like intrapreneurs, I believe that's how you say the word, are kind of underrated. I think like Steve Ballmer, I mean, he's got to be the wealthiest intrapreneur out there. Like, I feel like that aspect of like you said, like you almost need to like have skills everywhere to be an entrepreneur. Like, I do agree. Like, you do have to be a little bit of a different breed. You got to want to do it. Mm-hmm. And then an intrapreneur is like almost as valuable to the business as the entrepreneur, because it's like, hey, I need you to be a killer.
Yeah.
I don't think it's talked enough about like innovation from the entrepreneur. Like, they're essentially an entrepreneur, just maybe, you know, like it is like you're taking a leap. You got to be able to press. You got to be able to, you know, like you said, make moves you might not be comfortable with. Being an entrepreneur versus an intrapreneur is like you get that kind of safety net, but like you're a disruptor still. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's a good conversation, but I find like even, what was the stock that Nancy Pelosi got, in shit for investing in? Nevada.
I mean, it's every stock she invests in, right?
Yeah. But the founder came out about, like, they started in a Denny's, and they asked him, I don't know, like, do you think, like, he's being real when he said, like, as a founder yourself, like, could you resonate with him when he said, they asked him, like, would you do it again? And he said, no.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely things that we've been through that we've overcome now. I was like, I never want to go through that again. I think, like, I want to get cuts big enough to the point where I never have to be one.
Yeah.
But, like, you know what? I went to the first All-In conference, and I got to talk to, like, David Sachs for a little bit. And those guys are, like, 50-plus, and they're, like, grinding their asses off still. They're third- and fourth-time founders and so on. They have a podcast. They're busy. And I think, like, if it meant I was – like, I just don't ever really want to retire.
Yeah.
I just want to, like, be able to – do more things like luxury experiences. Like I hope to have a PJ one day so I can do it all. But I think like the addictionness of entrepreneurship of like, you know, you kill what you eat, there's progress, there's setbacks. Like I can't imagine like not having that, you know. Like I love it. Like there's definitely been periods of cuts that are more stressful that I don't want to do again, but you can't have it both ways. You can't have the triumphs without the losses. And I think if like I was just clocking in for a paycheck and it didn't lead up to something later in life, it'd be really hard for me to have joy in life. Like I just don't think I would have joy. Like maybe one day when I have kids and like that itch goes away and I just want to be a dad, maybe that's what happens. But right now, yeah, even in that scenario, I think I want to be an example. I think showing your kids that you work hard is super important too. So I don't even think that would be something that I would enjoy in that moment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, talking about PJs and things like that, Steven has been in the same apartment. It's the one really gritty thing about Steven since he started and moved to LA. It's not a controversial topic, but I remember I would get in these arguments with my ex-girlfriend about this. I'm sure she won't be listening to this. But I think it was like Bernie Sanders talked about like billionaires shouldn't exist. Talking about that topic is very sensitive to a lot of people. I feel like as being in business, we see the value of like what Elon Musk gives to the economy. Like I think I got here like in 21, it was like 100,000 people he employed.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to hear, and I'm sure a lot of people would love to hear, like, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think it's very nuanced, but to just be plainly, like, I think billionaires are great because, like, if there wasn't the opportunity to like, make a really great life for yourself, like, why put up with all the hell that you have to do with an entrepreneurship, you know? You know, we got a lot of mouths to feed at Cuts. You know, you know, a lot of people are relying on this to support their families. That's a big burden for an entrepreneur sometimes to handle, letting people go, you know, dealing with cash issues. I mean, there's a million issues that you have to go over that just wouldn't be worth it if the end goal wasn't there.
Yeah.
It may never get there, but the chase of it is the fun part, that it is possible. So like, that's such a stupid statement of billionaires can't exist, because then there's no more capitalism. I mean, that's something I'm really passionate about. Like I got interviewed for EY Entrepreneur of the Year in LA. And maybe one of the reasons I didn't get it was they were like, what's your give back story? What's Cuts' give back story? And I just blatantly said, I was like, the 50 people that work for me and the hundreds of people that work for me all over the world.
Yeah.
Like I don't feel like I need a give back. Mm-hmm. Like if more people did this, more people would, you know, there'd be more jobs in America. When we did that with zero money, we haven't raised a penny. And so, I'm super proud of that. And I remember she looked back and she was like, she kind of got it, but I was like, I'm super proud to say we don't do any, like, there's no other charities here that we're trying to make money. That's our charity.
Yeah.
I think like billionaires need to exist. But I would say just one caveat to be a little bit more nuanced. I think where Bernie Sanders comes from, and it's one of the things that companies or people that aren't in entrepreneurship feel like, hey, they're making so much money and there's no help for the little guy.
Yeah.
I think when big business colludes with the government to create regulatory capture, so like business and government team up to create even bigger businesses, and then they knock the competition down. That's crony capitalism, and that's not good for the sport of business and capitalism in general. And that's where the negative sentiment comes from people at times. And so that part of like capitalism, I think isn't good. And I think you're starting to see it more and more where I hope that doesn't happen. There's some good people in the government that don't do that. But I think in the early 2010s, you started to see more of that, and that's really bad for capitalism.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great answer. I think it's it goes deeper, like you said. And I think, again, social media can sometimes have that narrative. And I think there's a lot of people that I guess the stigma probably comes more from people who were wealth, and then the kids get all the wealth. And I think Shaq has done a good job coming out and saying,
yeah, I'm rich, you're not rich.
I'm rich, you're not rich. But yeah, no, I always think that topic, it strikes a chord with a lot of people.
I think the pass down of wealth never lasts that long. It's three generations tops. So I think that's part of it. And if anything, those kids are spending a lot of money, so it's going right back into the economy. No one system's perfect, and this is capitalism by far is the best way to get people out of poverty. By far, it's the best. There's never been something invented better than a true capitalistic economy. And I think there needs to be more of that narrative in the public sphere than business billionaires are bad. Mm-hmm. There's most of the billionaires are pretty good guys too, because there's no way to get there without being you have to have a lot of people that believe in you.
Yeah.
Now there's scandals and stuff like that, and business isn't pretty either. That's what people got to realize. There's a little bit of kill or be killed.
Yeah.
So you're going to create enemies, and that's just part of the game.
They've dedicated their lives.
Yes. To what they do. No one gets out clean. I have a buddy that always said that. He's no one gets out clean in business. You're going to piss some people off. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that my dad has taught me is. You're not going to, it's not going to always be nice. Not everyone's going to like you. And I think quickly in business, if you're the guy that wants to be liked, you'll die.
Yeah.
Cause you'll end up doing what it takes to be liked versus what it takes to win. Mm-hmm. And I think you see a lot of that on Twitter too, all the time. Kumbaya. And it's no mother effer, screw you, there's a little bit of that actually, I kind of and honestly, when someone kind of does it to me, I'm I like this guy. Mm-hmm. He's my guy. I'll let him see it in me too. But I have a lot more respect for those people than that. Just want to pat me on the back.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think you respect the most right now? In terms of if you were to look at top 100 billionaires in the world, who would you pinpoint and be I respect the shit out of that person?
Probably two, but they're both kind of in competition, but... I love Elon. I think I love that he just doesn't give a shit what
there's
he says.
There's that viral clip when, what was he talking about? Power, you can give me power or money and things like that.
Yeah, he just doesn't care. And what he did for free speech, was definitely something that I think really will benefit society long term. And it kind of empowered the other platforms to kind of lean more that way as well. And I think it was you look at where Canada is, that's, severe censorship versus the U.S. I mean, that could have been us without him. So, plus, his company is he's still 50 something and grinding his ass off. He loves it. He doesn't seem to be super materialistic either. He has a greater purpose, which I think is important. If when you get to that level, I think there is an element that he really does want to help people. He's not perfect by any means, but I think he does want to help people. The other one I always give credit to is our boy Mark Zuckerberg. Without Mark Zuckerberg, Cuts wouldn't be here. So Mark, if you're listening, I hope you wear our Cuts black tees, both you and Elon, but always give it up for Mark as well, because he's quite a bit different. Elon, I feel is a little bit more like me, because he's a grinder and, will say off the cuff things. And Mark, went to Harvard and, built it. But the dude's earnings keep coming out, keep crushing. He keeps focusing on how to help businesses win. And, you know, he's working on the algorithm to make it a better consumer product, which is hard because they combat each other. So both those guys, I think, like, actually think Mark's done has really helped himself out with kind of wearing looser baggy stuff. Yeah. MMM, doing more podcasts. Like, people kind of thought he was like this evil genius. And now I think people look at him like he's kind of a cool guy. So I think, like, Elon, he's kind of Eloning himself a little bit. And I want to see that cage match. But
yeah, I wonder how good, because Zuckerberg, like, he comes off as this kind of like awkward guy, like genius, obviously awkward type guy. Like, and all I keep seeing is he fights and he loves McDonald's.
Oh, he eats McDonald's still?
I'm pretty sure he eats McDonald's every day. That was, I saw, I don't know if it's true, so don't.
Wow, rumors on you. There's no way. He looks good.
No, but like he said that he almost like needs to eat McDonald's because of how many calories he loses.
Does he train that often?
Apparently he trains a lot. But that was going around social media about like him now doing this PR. Like, do you think it's true? Like, they're trying to push his narrative now?
Totally. Yeah. Like, I think it helps the stock price.
Yeah.
Like, if the guy is liked and cool, like, it's going to help. Like, when you're at that size, that mega of a business.
Because he came out of the woodworks.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, he's everywhere. Now he's going to UFC events, sitting right beside Dana. There's talks about him being on a card, like, not fight. I don't think he'll fight Elon.
That would be unreal.
I mean, Elon in a cage would be, like, the funniest thing ever.
Yeah, I would like to see him fight someone that's, like, up and coming, kind of similar skill set, similar career in the sport, but and see how he does, which would be really cool. That would be really cool. I think it's important for consumers to see the businesses that they're just to see them on a human effect. I think when you're always behind a screen, like the TikTokification of like the conspiracy world can kind of take over, like they're plotting to end the world and all of that can kind of come up.
They're normal guys.
Yeah, they're normal guys.
I think you find that with athletes too. Yeah. Like the athletes you talk to that come in the office, you kind of like see these guys, you never really see them much in person, that you talk to them, you're like, it's just a normal dude, which is the same if you were to talk to Zuckerberg. And he's just like...
I would love to meet Elon though. I think like it would just be cool to chat with him for a little bit, because I think it would be like, who knows where the conversation could go.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Why do you think people resonate with, like, for example, Elon? It's like, he's been able to cultivate like a cult like community on Twitter, now X, but, and even Tucker Carlson is always an interesting one to me, because it's like, people love Tucker Carlson, and like, he's probably top of the top right now when it comes to content. Like, guy interviews Putin, like, who's getting an interview with Putin? So I guess, why are people resonating with Tucker Carlson so much?
I think because he's so curious and he kind of says the quiet part out loud. Yeah. Like, I was just watching him on Rogan the other day and he was talking about like, you know, just, you know, some very controversial things, whether it was like Building 7 for, the World Trade Center that Alex Jones called. And he was like, he called that 2 months before it happened. Like, whether he's crazy or not, I wanted to ask him about it. And like, I appreciated that. It wasn't like he wasn't you know, trying to like be a conspiratorial. He was like, I want to ask him about that. And so I think like at times that's really refreshing, where it's not just like, nope, that's wrong. He'll dig into it a little bit. And I think there is a lot of like power that in people of that stature that just don't say the obvious part out loud.
Yeah.
And so when he does it, you're like, thank you, one of us. Like he's saying what we're all thinking. You know, I think with COVID and how that got mistrusted for so many people, they felt like we were lied to. Having him kind of say it out loud, and I think it's important for governments to have people like that to check them a little bit. The news, which, you know, got lost, but the news media is the balance of like democracy, where like they're the ones that are supposed to keep the government in check and keep them honest. And it felt like with the governments colluding with the news outlets, it was becoming, there wasn't that check, that checks and balances wasn't there. So in him, Rogan, and these long form podcasts are coming out where they're kind of speaking the truth is really refreshing. And I think podcasts have really be almost become mainstream. Like Joe was like, Joe Rogan's essentially mainstream media now,
yeah,
because it's got that many views. Like if you just looked at it on a view count versus like, you know, nightly CNN's got much less views than a lot of the top podcasts now. So I think that's one of the really good things out of media is because media at bite size with commercials that are like, you know, 2 minutes long, like you kind of, it kind of leads towards like summarized data and summarized facts and people can get assumptions really poorly. So as like our generation gets older, I think you'll start to, the truth will kind of come out much sooner than maybe it has before because more and more people are like, yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's crazy. I think COVID like really exposed that a lot. I think less people are trusting the news. But yeah, Tucker Carlson, I mean, even Rogan too, it's like they're so personable. Like Tucker will just like, when he's hanging out with the Nelk boys having Zins, like,
yeah, it's awesome.
You know, like, I think like, there's this like level of like, okay, like he's just saying what he truly thinks and there's not a narrative behind it.
And that's probably a good point of he doesn't feel like he's got someone in his ear saying yeah. do this or that, mm-hmm. Which is really refreshing. Like you feel like, all right, that's a real person saying real things versus like just a talking head that you see on like nightly news stations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it would be cool to get like a reporter on here or someone from a news outlet, even if they were X News, and to break down kind of like what that process looked like.
And it makes sense. Like who, if you think about news, a lot of their backers are like pharmaceutical companies. So yeah. I don't even,
that's just crazy.
But I don't even fault them for it necessarily yeah. because like they're if our customers didn't want a certain product, we wouldn't come out with that product.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they're like, hey, we're pushing X drug, don't talk shit on it, you know,
at the end of the day,
that's how they're making money.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. it's just that system for news created, like when it comes to that field, created like bad information. Mm-hmm. And when that was like the primary source of news, it can cause a lot of harm. But now with podcast, like if you're still watching nightly news and you're treating that as facts, you're kind of a loser, you know, yeah. like, you got to do better. yeah. You got to find other people to listen to. And, you know, I was listening to Glenn Beck and Josh McPherson. They were talking about, you know, the government's role in COVID and how the governor of Washington wouldn't let his church, like, participate. And he studied the Constitution to understand, like, if it was right or wrong, and I'm explaining this poorly, but I think like as more and more people start to look for truth, you'll see less like the effectiveness of power because it's there's things that just aren't true and against the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do you think AI is going to play into that? I feel like Stephen always sends us these AI models and AI, like real people on social. And I saw, clip of Gary Vee saying that, I think it was in 2035. His new prediction is that AI influencers are going to be a real thing and that people are going to have AI, influencer agencies where essentially like we would pay them they would have this whole roster of AI influencers. But like, gosh. Could AI take over? Like, that's the thing with news reporting. It's like,
yeah,
like I feel like AI, like that might be the first one to come in as a person. Cause like, why would you yeah. need a real person really reporting on the news?
I think you'll start to see a counterbalance to that too. Like mm-hmm. there's parts of AI I love. Like I think it makes, there's certain parts of it that like, you know, when I'm sending an important email loaded into ChatGPT and I'm like, man, I sound so much smarter. So there's definitely things that are like I'm using already. Like, why not use the tools that are going to make you more efficient? Then there's like the AI models, like they're getting like already good. Like a girl that's not a model will make a video. She'll put it in AI and it'll make her look, you know, 100 times better. And then there already is AI models in that form that it's like they're upgrading a human model. And like, it's scary good. Yeah. And I guess, like, I don't know what to think of it. I don't know if I like it.
It's almost like a real-life Photoshop.
Yeah, it's like video, like, live Photoshop, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're probably going to have to compete. We're going to have to use it in some way, that whether we got to talk about it. Mm-hmm. video editing and stuff like that, I get excited for, because it, you know, if there's a cloud in the sky, you can get rid of the cloud, but way, but you know, I think movies will be made easier because of it. But yeah, I think
it's nuts.
What one business idea I had was like bars with no phones. Like you have to check your phone in. Like as simple as that. Like I think the
master strategy.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. I think there'll be some counterbalance to like the ultra internet connectivity, which is sort of like really shallow at times. Because I think we're in an era of like overconsumption where you just have so much data that it's hard to like learn necessarily. So I think understanding like how to use that, you know, in the right ways with also preserving the human to human interaction is going to be like, you know, I feel bad for kids a little bit now because my generation, we didn't have phones growing up. The phones, I mean, it was such an awesome, I feel like we can handle technology a little bit better. But now I think schools are already doing it, but finding a way to like not have communication, because I think the most important skills you learn in school are off the internet. You can learn those really quickly when it's time for it, but you don't want to like, because then I feel like whether it's video games or like scrolling TikTok, you slowly lose your personality a little bit. Like I can see it in myself. Like if I'm just like going for hours, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like
it's addicting. Yeah.
I am stupider. And less happy, like a little bit less happy versus the days I'm like my favorite day is Saturday. I wake up, I go on a long run with my wife. We go to eat and very little phone time for like the first, like, you know, till like one or two. And those days I'm like, I love it, you know, especially running. I love running even more now because like there's no phone. And I think like finding times to do that are super important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, AI is just nuts. I mean, there's some things you could do right now that it's just like blows my mind still. But I do think the AI influencer topic is like, I think it will be a thing.
Yeah.
It's like faceless Instagram accounts. Like now that you can put a person to it, like, It could get crazy, crazy good. And like, you could almost pinpoint like niche accounts to like essentially go viral, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But, with AI and cuts, like what's next with cuts, like in general though, like talking about AI and talking about cuts making the next step, what do you see as the next step for cuts?
I feel like we have a long way to go of continuing making great products. We always want to start with product because people are buying things from us. So just continuing to innovate on products and have great things that people want to wear. Luckily in the fashion space, like it's still a physical thing, you know, it's not on a computer. Thank God.
Yeah. Or else we'd be tired of going bankrupt.
Yeah. you know, how we use AI in the business is going to be important to keep up with competition, which is we're going to have to. I think it's also important, to do other things outside of making clothes. Like the podcast is super, and we're bringing back the vlogs. We didn't have that for about a year and a half. And I felt like, you know, the culture of the business, wasn't as there. Mm-hmm. Who do we got in the office right now?
I'm coming. We could hear some,
we heard some ruckus, but, it's still a big open area here, but, just having more of a personality as a brand we're trying to do over the next few years. Sometimes you can overthink it in business, but I think it's important just to do cool stuff.
Yeah.
And not overthink it. And we've definitely been there at times.
Yeah. I think we're trying to put a face to the brand.
Yeah.
I think it's like, I've always said this too, and we talked about this. It's like, there's not many brands out there that are like giving an open door. Even when I was younger growing up, I wish there was a company that just like showed me what was going on so I could learn.
Yeah.
And I think with this series coming out and when this gets launched, it'll probably be live, but hopefully it gives like an idea of like, I want to go do something or I want to work for cuts, which we want people who align with for the sport of business to apply and want to work here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's one thing too, we've gotten wrong is like from an employee standpoint, the best employers are the ones that just love cuts.
Yeah.
Like on a simple basis that like literally can't wait to work here. Mm-hmm. And like you can figure out the skills later, but if you love the business and it gets you juiced to work here, those are the ones that I think see more than just the paycheck, which in a startup is super important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think some people will resonate with the product, obviously, and then some people will resonate with the brand. Mm-hmm. Like personally, I resonate with the brand before the product. And I think that's like extremely powerful. Like if we can find people that resonate with, I think like for the sport of business is such a, you know, it's like competing. It's all these athletes can resonate. And even if you're not an athlete, it's like competing at what you do. No one in this industry offers that.
Yeah. I love that we have that trademark for the sport of business. Yeah, I love it. It's competing. We've met a lot of cool people through it. I've been to, you know, all over the globe for business. I've been to Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. I've been to, you know, China, Vietnam, Mexico City. I've done a lot of cool stuff, met a lot of professional athletes. My community, I'm still like getting older, but I'm meeting more and more people. And so it's just a great life to have, like, and more people. I want, like, our mission as a business to inspire those to compete in the sport of business. And hopefully through the vlogs, we can do a better job at that. And just to kind of promote that message, which is super important. And, you know, most importantly, make badass products while you're competing.
Yeah. I think it was Sean, who's our VP of ops, made a great point. And he was like, when you're lounging on a Saturday, like you don't say like, let me put my cuts on. Like, it's when you're doing something big or it's a massive moment in your career.
Yeah.
You make sure you have cuts on. Like, it makes you feel like you want to get after it. And that's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was great chatting. I'm excited for what's
to do more of these. Yeah. We're just getting started. We got a lot of cool products coming out this August. We have a bunch of items we've been working on. I think the last year we've maybe been a little slower with product development than we were in previous years, but we're upping that up, more women's stuff, more cool content. So it feels like we're just getting started. So yeah.
Excited.
Awesome. Well, love you guys.